Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey gang, welcome to another episode of Tuesday Night Jaw Meets on the Distraction Pieces Network. My name is Jim, I am your host, and today I am speaking to Paro. If you don't know who Paro is, excellent wrestler from America, a big dude, 6'4", 300 pounds, but also has a very interesting story. In that a story about him coming out as gay publicly went quite viral right at the beginning of this year, back end of last year. And he's a friend of mine, and I've wanted to have him on to have a chat for a while because I think his story is fascinating, and he's a wonderful, wonderful dude. And as you'll hear, we planned on chatting for an hour today. We ended up chatting for an hour and 45 minutes because he is awesome. His story is super positive, super inspiring, and he's a great guy. I'm very much looking forward to seeing when I'm out in New Orleans in 3 weeks' time. I'm really, really pleased how this has turned out, and it was great chatting to him. So we'll get to the chat in a minute. The plugs first. Obviously, we're on the Distraction Pieces Network, so check out everything on said podcast network. That would make me very happy indeed. I'm very proud about being on the network, so do please support it. Then to wrestling stuff. First off, this podcast, jimsmorman.com/TNJ, lowercase. jimsmorman.com/TNJ. Point new listeners at this very podcast. I'd be very grateful. Rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. That's super helpful as well. Just tell people about it. Keep spreading the word. I'm very happy doing this podcast. I'm very happy that it makes so many people happy every week. And I'm trying to put out as many episodes as I can. The next few weeks are going to be interesting, especially with all the travel I've got planned. But you know, I'm going to be with a few cool people, so let's see what happens. But yeah, do keep please spreading the word about the podcast. I am very grateful for everyone who chooses to do so. Progress stuff. There's big shows coming up. ProgressWrestling.com in the main for tickets or merchandise, etc. But let's run through the big shows. 6th and 7th of April in New Orleans at noon as part of the WWN live experience. Go to morethanmania.com for tickets for that or ProgressWrestling.com. April the 6th, April the 7th in New Orleans, about a few minutes away from New Orleans International Airport. The Pontchartrain Exhibition Centre, I want to say it's called. I could have got that wrong, but there's details on ProgressWrestling.com. April 6th, April 7th. We've started announcing a lot of talent for it. We've still got some cool talent coming up. Friday at noon, Saturday at noon of WrestleMania weekend. Boom. That's the first order of events. Secondly, we're already into over four figures for each day. In terms of attendance for Super Strong Style 16, biggest Super Strong Style 16 that we've ever done. We used to get 700 a day. We've already got a fair few people coming to these shows. So do get on board if you want to come along to Super Strong Style 16 on the 5th, 6th and 7th of May at Alexandra Palace in London. 5th, 6th, 7th of May, Alexandra Palace. We've already announced the first eight people who are going to be in the tournament at Super Strong Style 16. There's going to be other stuff outside of the tournament as well. And it's looking up to be one of the best. I'm going to say it. It's looking up to be our best Super Strong Style 16 ever. It's the biggest, that's for sure. So there's weekend tickets and day tickets available. 5th, 6th and 7th of May, ProgressWrestling.com. Then May the 20th. May's mental for us, I'm not going to lie. I've not even included the fact that we're going to Australia in April. And New Zealand, me and Travis Banks. But May the 20th, we're at Victoria Warehouse in Manchester. Jack Sexsmith will be taking his world title shots with against whoever is world champion at the time. May the 20th, Victoria Warehouse, biggest show we've ever done in Manchester. Ticket sales going well, already the biggest show we've ever done in Manchester, but the tickets are still available, progresswrestling.com for more information on that. May the 20th, Victoria Warehouse, Manchester. Whew. We've also got tickets on sale for our next trips to Sheffield and Birmingham, but there's only a handful of tickets left for each of those. Again, progresswrestling.com. They're in June and July. And then finally, September the 30th, we do Wembley Arena. Ticket sales are going great for this, but obviously we want it to be as full as is humanly possible. At the minute, it is shaping up to be the biggest wrestling show in England for 30 years. It'd be nice if we can make it one of the biggest independent wrestling shows in history, but we need your help to spread the word about it, to come along to it. Just come and enjoy yourself watching wrestling in Wembley Arena. I was answering some questions about it today and people saying, oh, what's the view like? The view's brilliant everywhere. It's Wembley Arena. So come along, September the 30th, the biggest show we will likely ever do. September the 30th at Wembley Arena, progresswrestling.com for more information on that and merch and stuff as well. Demand-progress.com for all of the Progress shows and a load of other stuff from all of our little partner parent companies around the world that we've got these cool little partnerships with. This is really, really awesome. Whether it's Defy over in the Pacific Northwest in America or Melbourne City Wrestling in Australia, there's loads of cool companies that... It's brilliant now as Progress is a little company and we've managed to buddy up with so many other little companies to get the word of independent wrestling out there. So support us and other companies through demand-progress.com. Whew, plugs over. Let's go and have a chat with Paro because he's a top, top, top dude. And I'll see you on the other side. Thanks, guys.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, Paro. How's it going, man?
It's going good.
It's a pleasure to speak to you. Sadly, by Skype and not in person, because every time you come to the UK, I miss you. And you seem to be here quite a lot now, which is quite nice.
Yeah, I feel like you're dodging me, actually.
Never. It's always a pleasure to see you. I was thinking about this earlier on about how I first met you, and. The first time I met you and spoke to you, you weren't wrestling. It was in Orlando for either when we were doing a Progress show or around an Evolve show. And you had a shirt and tie on and was incredibly smart. And I think the first time I was introduced to you, no one told me you were a wrestler. I just thought you were this amazingly well-built dude who happened to work behind the scenes in wrestling. And afterwards, when it was revealed you were a wrestler, I was like, of course, that makes perfect sense. But you're one of the most helpful people we encountered.
Well, I like to learn everything in wrestling, not just be a wrestler. I like to learn everything, how it works. I'm one of those kind of people. Like, I always wanted to know behind the scenes everything. So I take opportunities when people offer them.
Do you know what it made me think of? It made me think of, you know, when you read up on about how ECW used to be, and obviously Heyman was running it, but Tommy Dreamer would help out with stuff and Taz would help out with stuff. And that's what popped into my head of just someone who just wants to be part of things and help things out. Helps that you're a good wrestler as well. But from our experience, you were so nice and so helpful to us. We were like, what a great dude. What an awesome dude. So for things to sort of kick on for you as they have done this year is really cool for me to see from a distance, because I'm here in the UK and you're in the States, but it's really cool to see someone who I like personally have good things happen to them because of the press that you've had in the last few months.
Yeah, well, I never imagined I would get as much press as I did. Let's put it that way. I never assumed that, or in a million years, that the article would have had so many reshares and people talking about it that it did.
I think because the article was, like, I remember I shared it with my Twitter feed, but I knew you were gay because you told me. So you just dropped it into a conversation once that you had a boyfriend, and I was like, oh, cool. Like, because I don't, like, I've got so many gay friends. I don't care if someone's gay. It's just if you're a good person or a bad person, that's how it works. You're a good person. And I remember you telling me and me going, oh, because I didn't expect it. And then was like, oh, but that's cool. And it was cool that you told me and you shared it with me. And it meant a lot to me that you did share it with me. And when the article came out, it was a no-brainer for me, and I know a lot of my friends, to share it, because it was genuinely a really, really cool thing to have around wrestling, because it's very foolish to presume there's no gay wrestlers. It's a ridiculous thing to presume, but some people do go through their wrestling fandom presuming that that's the case. And it, you know, when most people are aware that one of the most famous wrestlers of all time, Pat Patterson, was openly gay and everyone was fine with it. I find it amazing that there are more out wrestlers, if that makes sense.
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. There's not many out wrestlers. One, they're out to the boys in the back and the girls in the back, that, you know, they're out to those people, but they're not out to the community. Because even me, before the article hit, it was the wrestler, like the boys in the back, that actually told me, hey man, maybe you should share your story. You know, we all know, but I think your story will help people. One of the big proponents of me actually doing the article is Martin Stone, Danny Burch for NXT. He's one of my biggest supporters, and he's like, hey man, maybe you should do this article. Because I was actually hesitant about doing it, because, you know, I didn't want to make it, how do I say this the right way? I didn't want to make it like, hey, he's trying to get opportunities because he's gay. Because everybody already knew that I was gay backstage. Like, sure. Nobody did not know. They were very supportive of it. But I didn't want other people to take it the wrong way, like I was trying to get opportunities because I am a gay man. I wanted to, my main goal was to help kids like me to understand that they're not alone. Like, growing up, I had no role models, like nobody to look up to. There was no LGBT storylines in wrestling whatsoever. And the one that they did do that I fell in love with broke my heart, with the Chuck and Billy. And that was like, to me, that was like, wrestling's never going to accept LGBT guys. They're just not. Like, that storyline literally broke my heart. So, like, growing up as a kid and you see those sort of things, you kind of just like, oh, well, it's not, let's, they're just never going to do it, so might as well not. But now, especially with the independents and more promotions supporting LGBT athletes, it's different now. You get to see people and promotions start giving people opportunities that necessarily wouldn't, characters, I should say, have opportunities that they would never have before. And they're not labeled into such a stereotype of what an LGBT athlete has to be. You know, it's not just one type of person. It's many different types, because there's many gay there's starting to be many gay athletes out there that have different characters and they're openly gay. And it's rewarding to watch, I guess, as a gay man, to see, you know, people having success just being them.
Hmm. I think that's the key as well, isn't it? In 2018, you are a gay guy, but there's no reason, you don't need to be defined by it. You can still be you, and your wrestling character is far from a stereotype, in that, you know, for people who've perhaps never seen you before, you're a massive dude who kills people. Like, you're being you. I'd forgotten completely about the Chuck and Billy storyline as well. And you're right, because I remember watching that here, even as a straight guy, I remember watching that here and thinking, oh, it's such a shame that they didn't go down a more modern route with it and do something really clever with it.
Like, I'll tell you, they might not know this. Like, I've actually never told Billy this, but it hurt, actually. Mm. And, like, it was the first time, because as a fan and, you know, a young adult watching it, you're like, oh, okay, they're going to do something. And it's a character that I might have been in the closet. People might have not known I was gay, but I knew I was gay. Mm. And it was like finally looking up to somebody. Then all of a sudden, they just pulled the rug out from under you and like, nah, we weren't gay at all. We were just pretending. And I'm like, well, okay. Well, that's great for... It was one of those things that I thought was poorly written.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was a bad idea. I just don't think it was the time for it.
Sure.
You know, because it was so groundbreaking at the time that when you pulled the rug out and closeted young, like, you had a lot of young teenagers watching at that time period. It was a very different time in wrestling, and you had a lot of people viewing. And when you watched, and you're like, "Whoa, okay," like, even if they weren't like you knew they weren't gay, you obviously knew it, but you still, for storyline purposes, you wanted to see them get married. It was like the first wrestling wedding. You just didn't want to see anybody go through a table. You're like, please don't let this end with somebody going through a table. And then you're like, then it does, and you're like, it's not even a table. They're like, oh, we were just faking you all out. I'm like, oh, okay, well, now where do you go? Like, and then after that, there hasn't been any really groundbreaking, like, storylines for LGBT characters. Like, either it's a stereotype or they just don't have opportunities. And I'm not saying, you know, because it is a touchy subject to play upon.
Hmm.
I do understand that. It's not like, oh, they should do it. It's just, I think I would like to see, especially companies, take that risk.
Sure.
See where it goes. Because the problem is, a lot of people, there's a lot of misinformation out there. And everything you see, especially wrestling's entertainment, you know, when there's no LGBT storylines, you're like, so there's no gay wrestlers? Like you said earlier, like, so let me get this straight. Gay people don't watch wrestling? They do, you know? Like, it's just an example. Everybody's like, why is Black Panther so successful? Well, it's because you're actually showing them showing that community not as drug dealers or rappers or all about the gold. You know, it has nothing to do with living in the ghetto or anything. As showing strong women, strong African-American men, just playing like strong characters.
I think
LGBT community doesn't have strong characters anywhere on TV.
You see, I remember listening to, I think it was Chris Jericho interviewing Darren Young not long after he'd come out, and Titus O'Neil being there with him as well, and it being a really sweet interview, because Titus O'Neil was very much 100% behind his friend, absolutely loved him, you know, was absolutely cool about Darren coming out, and that was really cool. And I remember at the time thinking, this would be a great opportunity for WWE to do something with a storyline with a very positive gay role model. in Darren Young, and it was a, like, they never shied away from, they shied away from it a bit, but they didn't. They didn't sort of.
They didn't focus on the fact that he was an LGBT athlete. They focused more on the storyline that they were doing, which I totally understand. But I do see what you're saying. They could have done so much more with that, but they didn't shy away from the fact of his charity work. So at least in that sense, they at least recognized the fact that, you know, we need to reach out to different. More, let's diversify our fan base rather than a certain group. So I at least in that sense that happened. But yeah, I do understand what you're saying. They didn't go towards any kind of gay storyline with him. They just were like, this is Darren Young and he's gay. And now we'll just move on with the storyline. So yeah, I totally understand what you're saying.
Do you think, and this is something that I've spoken about with a couple of people within wrestling before, for example, in the UK, it's a lot easier for us to have a character like a pansexual character like Jack Sexsmith, and for him to be a babyface and everyone to love him, because we're a very small country, and as a rule, there's no real difference. There's a little bit of difference in terms of people's acceptability in politics from, say, the north to the south or the east to the west, but it's not quite the same as in the States. So, for example, if you were wrestling for a company and you were given a storyline that played up your homosexuality in New York, it would probably be more embraced than it would if you were given that same storyline in somewhere in the Deep South, for example. So do you think part of the problem with the acceptability of it in America is the geography of the country, because that does make things a little bit difficult?
Do you know what? Like, I was when I first came out, that's something that I was very worried about. How am I going to be received in certain areas of the country? And I'm going to tell you something. I was in Texas this weekend for a show.
I saw on your Twitter feed.
Yes, we were in Texas for a show, and after the show, you know, when the fans come up and you sign posters and all that kind of stuff, something that I'm very big on. And I think a lot of guys miss the opportunity of meeting with fans because they're so caught up on I'm a bad guy or I'm a good guy. You know, interaction with the fans is one of the most important things in the independent world that guys overlook, I think. But the number one thing that happened to me was people coming up to me, and these people are straight farmers, and like, this is Trump country. You know, this area of politics isn't what you would, isn't somewhere in Queens.
Sure.
They came up to me and they're like, you know, I'm proud of you for sharing your story. That story was great. Thank you for sharing that. You know, something that I didn't expect to happened. And I'm learning that more and more, that if you're honest and open, is more respectable than like you expecting them to act a certain way. So, you know, you're writing them off. I don't think you should write them off. Like I've been coming to learn, they respect you more. I've learned, how do I say this the right way? The number one thing I learned, especially with my straight friends, is they are way more curious than they are hateful. So when you actually have a chance to have an open conversation with somebody that maybe said some things before that were very derogatory, it's most likely because they don't understand, because they're only going with what they were told or what they were raised with. So when you have the opportunity to actually have an open discussion about it, you learn a lot more about people. You know, like your preconceptions about a certain area change when you actually get to meet people from that area. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it does seem, certainly from what you've been posting on social media and the general reaction to when the article first went up, it does seem that I've been pleased, as someone who likes you, I've been pleased that you seem to have got such a positive reaction, because, like you say, as a British person, as an outsider looking into America, my first fear was, some places are going to be cool and some places aren't. And it's really cool that you are getting a positive reaction in some places. I do have to ask the question, have you had any negativity, be it from crowds or be it from in the locker room or anything like that? Have you had any any negativity at all since you came out?
Well, as we know, this is wrestling, and you tend to learn to tune out negativity because it happens. People say things because this is the age of social media where you can say whatever you want with no repercussions. Yes, I've had negative. The positive outweighs the negative, but yes, I've had negative. I don't want to say that I don't. I try to stay away from it because, you know, highlighting that takes away from the fact that there is a lot more positive than there is negative. But yes, I've had wrestling fans, huge write-ups about, I'm just doing this to get pushed. I'm like, I'm laughing. I'm like, well, yeah, I'm going to get that huge push on the independents. I'm like, come on. I think in their mind that independent wrestlers make millions of dollars somehow. Like, I don't think they know what it's actually like driving 17 hours to a show, you know, for minimal money, for, you know, to do some, to chase your dream. I don't think they understand how independents really work to like comment like that. And then I've also had backlash from the gay community because I did say some things that weren't positive in my article. And I do understand that, you know, and some people felt attacked by it, but I just told my story and what happened to me, you know, and it was interesting to see because I knew there was going to be some backlash from the article, and there's been a couple guys that have said certain things, like, you know, they weren't exactly happy that, you know, I'm in certain spots and certain promotions, you know, but they also don't understand. I've been wrestling for almost 9 years now. I've had ups. I have had downs just like anybody else. I've had complete failures. Like I said the other day on Twitter, you know, failure can be a blessing, you know, and people don't understand that sometimes. Like when the best thing that ever happened to me in my life was WWE after my tryout camp giving me a form letter that said no. That's the best thing that ever happened to my career, because now it allowed me the opportunity to come out of the closet, tell people who I am, because I was afraid. I was afraid if I said the words that I'm gay, my wrestling career was over, that promotions weren't going to book me. And, you know, that didn't happen. It, you know, in fact, you know, example, when I told Gabe that when I first start working for WWN, and I told Gabe, I said, hey, Gabe, I said, you know, because he told me what he wanted to do with me. And I said, listen, you know, I love that whole idea. Like, I love it. It's amazing. But I'm gay. And he goes, okay. So I'm like, he goes, so, and it was because you, even yourself, you form these preconceived notions that, okay, well, I have to tell him I'm gay because if he starts pushing me, people aren't going to the believability. But he's like, no, this is just you. I'm doing the reason that you haven't had, like Gabe said, the reason most of the times I hadn't had success was because I wasn't being me. I was trying to do everything to hide the fact of who I was. So a lot of my success comes from the fact that I was told no from WWE, and I was allowed to come out of the closet and stop being afraid and start taking my career where I wanted it to go. And through that road, you know, coming out, you have a lot of guys in the locker room that aren't necessarily happy with the fact that there is a gay badass and not grinding up on, you know, because a lot of times a lot of gay characters in wrestling are stereotypical, you know, he's going to go for the, you know, and grind, go for a move and then grind up on me. And then I'm going to have to act this way. And I'm like, that's just not me. I can't do that kind of gay. That's just not who I am. I like beating people up and throwing them through walls. That's what I do. That's the wrestling I am. And I learned in the past 2 years that being me has helped me. So when people are negative like that and say, oh, this guy, they just don't understand. So, yeah, I've had negative, but you know what? I look, like you said, I look more at the positive than I do the negative.
I think you have to do that with social media. I've learned to do that in the last... I mean, I'm constantly on this podcast mentioning the one person who tweeted me telling me that I was a millionaire last year. And it really bugs me.
I read that, the one where you sold out.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, believe me, like, I wouldn't have as many jobs as I do if I had $1 million. I would work a lot less. But it happens all the time. And I've, at the time, there's something really weird about, like, just negative tweets in general. Like, they set me on edge, and then the more I realized they were consuming me, the more I realized it was an easier thing just to go, no, I'm not going to pay attention to them now. I'm not even going to block people. I'm going to mute people, because then they can't show off and go, oh, I've been blocked by this person. So it's just, you know. You mentioned the whole throwing people through walls thing. I would implore everybody to go onto your Twitter and see your pinned tweet at the top of your Twitter feed, which is you legitimately throwing someone into a wall, a gif of you doing it. I forget who it is who you're throwing into the wall.
His name is Stephen Frick. Right. He got an opportunity to face me, and I powerbombed him into a wall from the ring.
And it's such a brutal gif as well. You just watch it and go, oh, God.
Well, the one thing I've learned at it, I'm very innovative with the power bomb. Mm. I have many different ways to throw people into things, and I just got creative with one move, and that's what I kind of known for now, is power bombing people into random objects.
It's a cool thing, man.
The crowd, the ring post, the stage, the announcers. I think I've powerbombed everybody into anything that isn't the ring.
Yeah. I think in today's society as well, with how social media is used, if you can find something you can be gift for, like even me as a ring announcer, because I do so much comedy in the ring, like that's where the little clips of me as a ring announcer come about, and it just helps grow my little tiny brand as a ring announcer. And it's the same if you're a wrestler. You've got to be, it's a thing, I suppose, no one was thinking about a decade ago, but now everyone's thinking, are this, even with everyone's short attention span and stuff like that, if I can get someone's attention for 10 seconds while they see me doing something really, really cool, then it's only going to help more people pay attention to me, which is, because I've noticed more and more gifts of you recently, of you doing stuff like the cool power bombs and obviously your tag team stuff you do as well. Because that stuff looks badass in a GIF, mate. You know, people need to see that.
It's funny. It's like people, I've actually, you know, I have a degree in politics, and I always,
which is perfect for wrestling, by the way.
people underestimate things.
Yeah.
And I told a lot of people a while ago, I was like, those gifts are important. And a lot of guys were like, oh, wrestlers are just wrestling for gifts now. I go, no, they're not wrestling for gifts.
No.
Gifts are part of your match. It's like a movie. They give you a preview to sell you the movie. That's what the gift is. Hmm. So the gift is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a preview for people to come watch your match. So maybe they didn't see your match, but they saw what you did here. So now this gives the opportunity to the fan to look you up and find you and actually watch a match.
Absolutely.
So, you know, a lot of guys are all like, oh, guys. But that's the other thing. You have to still tell your story in the match. Hmm. Don't plan your match around gifts. Gifts will come, because if you're telling the right story, there's going to be stuff to gift. But if you're just wrestling for gifts, then you're not going to have a good match. So when that person comes to actually watch your match, is like, oh, wow, this guy's terrible. And then they tune you out. So it's a double-edged sword. You actually have to do good matches at the same time. Because I see a lot of guys that do that. They're like, they wrestle for the gift. Mm. And then when people go and watch them, they're like, wow, that guy's terrible. And it's because they've focused so much of doing the one cool move to get gifted, but they don't realize the gift is a preview.
Yeah.
So they want to buy the movie. So when they go watch the movie and it's not like the preview, they're going to tell everybody
yeah.
that this movie sucks.
Yeah.
So you need to be careful as a professional wrestler these days of make sure your movie's good too. You know, don't give everybody your cool preview and then you go and you're like, okay, this movie is terrible. So, because I've seen tons of guys, I'm like, wow, that guy's awesome. And then I watch him and I'm like, well, you did everything wrong. I'm like, to build to that one spot that Joe K or Wrestling with Unicorns or all these other guys that are out there that are gifters that so they could just gift that one spot. Well, they have to be aware that once they gift you and your work isn't good, they're not going to gift you again because it looks bad on them. Yeah. That they keep gifting you. That's the other thing about gifts that people don't understand. So I would caution guys that, you know, this is an era of social media. So be well aware of people are going to watch you because of the gift. So if you're doing your matches just for the gift, be well aware when those fans buy that movie, look, hopefully that movie's good too.
Yeah.
That would be my advice for gifts.
Let's rewind to when you started. Now, you mentioned when you were watching Billy and Chuck and stuff like that, presumably you were a teenager? Would that be?
Yes, I was a teenager with Chuck and Billy.
So, I mean, how young were you when you knew you were gay? That's question one. And how young were you when you knew you wanted to be a wrestler? That's question two.
I always have known I was gay. Mm-hmm. I have never thought I was straight. That shocks a lot of people because I had multiple relationships with women through college and high school, college, and even leading up to before I came out. I just couldn't form an emotional attraction towards women. It's not that I don't think they're pretty. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're obviously like a beautiful woman, but it does nothing for me. Hmm. But I've always had, I knew I liked men.
Yeah.
But you know, it's very hard in a sports locker room to turn to your what you would call your mate and say, "Hey, bro, yeah, Sarah's great, but have you seen Jimmy?" Like, you know, that was one of the things that I always dealt with. But so I knew I fell in love with wrestling weirdly. So my next door neighbors were my grandparents. But they weren't my biological grandparents, but I always treated them as my grandparents.
Okay.
So my grandmother's mother every Sunday would watch professional wrestling and football. And she loved the Dallas Cowboys and professional wrestling because she came from the Ukraine. And when she got here, they told her to be more American. You had to like American things like the Dallas Cowboys and professional wrestling. True story. So every Sunday I'd watch wrestling with my little sister with her. And my little sister loved Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart growing up. Loved them. Like, remember when they did the hotline thing for your birthday?
Yeah, dude.
she got that and all that. But I wasn't really into wrestling then. Like, that didn't hook me. But Monday Night Wars, that's when I got hooked. You know, I wouldn't say Monday Night Wars that's exactly when, like, I became a fanatic rather than just a casual watch every Sunday. Because the first live event I ever went to was the Royal Rumble in Albany, New York.
What year was that?
Ric Flair won it.
Oh, 92. So, 92. Yeah. The fact that I knew it that quick. 92 is my favorite. I mean, like, I'm super jealous of the fact you were at that as well.
Well, it's funny. So Albany, New York has some of the coolest moments in professional wrestling at Monday night. Hmm. So the first time, you know, I got to see, you know, those moments, but I got to see the formation of D-Generation X, Triple H, Billy, China, Road Dogg, X-Pac.
Yep.
So that happened in Albany, New York. The Rock's taking over the Nation of Domination happened in New York. The beer truck, I was front row for the beer truck.
Amazing.
Yeah. the beer truck was actually funny. So my parents' best friends, and when you're in New York, they're like, your parents' best friends are like your uncle and your aunt.
Sure.
That, 'cause that's just how it works. And he knew that I was a huge wrestling fan. So he helped me get tickets right on the ramp. And he's like, hey, something special is happening, because he used to own gas stations and a construction company. Mm. And he worked with DeCrescenti, which was the beer thing.
Yeah.
And they had told him that this was going to happen, but didn't tell me. Literally the coolest moment ever is like watching the beer truck pull the Titantron, and you're like, it's gonna fall on me, but I don't care. Like, so that was one of the coolest moments in wrestling, that no matter what happens, as a fan, it's like you were part of one of the coolest moments ever. And I miss those kind of moments. I wish sometimes there was a Monday Night War again to have those kind of moments to draw you in. I like, you know, they do a little bit with Strowman with the flipping over the trucks and the Christmas trees and stuff, which is cool. Mm. But I, you know, there hasn't been a beer truck moment in like 20 years. And I would love to see another beer truck moment, because, you know, it was always cool to go to. That's what really hooked me in wrestling, was like, I want to be a professional wrestler. This is an amazing job. If you get to do that, that's amazing.
Did you have sort of, with you being a sort of fairly big dude, were you playing football and stuff like that? Do you have a sort of sporting background when you were at school and at college?
Yes.
And stuff?
I grew up playing football. I went to college and played football. You know, what's funny is like, I never had the ambition, like, I would love to have played in the NFL, but I never had that ambition. Even when I was in college, and my coach can tell you this, I would literally force the guys to watch wrestling. Like, I forced a lot of the guys to watch the Mania from Orlando, the first one,
yeah,
where Ric Flair retired. Yeah. Say what you want, but all those guys that were too tough to watch wrestling were crying as soon as Shawn Michaels said, I'm sorry, I love you. I'm like, yeah, guys, now tell me wrestling is fake. I'm like, you were all crying and you said you didn't love it. So, yeah, I played football, but like, I had always had the passion to actually be a professional wrestler rather than a football player at the end.
Do you think the obviously the sort of, and again, we don't have that culture so much in the UK, but do you think the sort of jock culture that is around playing sort of high school and college football, do you think that had an effect on you sort of obviously not wanting to come out, even though, you know, you obviously knew you were gay at the time?
Yes, it had a huge thing. Well, I went to Catholic school all my life too, you know. So when you're preached that it's a sin and you're going to hell, and I grew up in a small town where there wasn't LGBT community around, and like I said, there is no role models in sports and TV growing up where I could be like, okay, this guy's like me, because the only thing I saw on TV growing up was Will and Grace, and I am nothing like those guys. So I'm like, well, I'm not like those guys, so I'm probably not gay, you know, even though I like guys, but, you know, I'm not like that. So that was the only culture that I was given to.
Mm.
So I didn't really want to come out because I thought my friends would leave me. Now, that American jock culture that you're talking about, it's different now. The kids coming up in athletes now are such more respect a guy for being out than they did before. You know, in the 90s, the negative part of the 90s was that attitude era was a lot of homophobic, misogynistic stuff that was all over television, especially in wrestling.
Yeah, it was hyper masculine, wasn't it?
It was over masculine. Like, you have to be this way because that's this, that's that. Like the saying, like, when somebody looks over you and goes, well, that's gay. Well, what does that mean, bro? Like, I always do that when somebody's like, well, that's gay. And I'll just turn around in the car and go, what's gay? You know, and it does help that the fact that I'm 6'4", 300 pounds, and everybody kind of knows I'll throw them into a wall. So they're like, no, man, gay, like happy. So it's like, even though I don't get upset with that, but a lot of people do, you know, words hurt people. Words don't hurt. It's easier being a pro wrestler because words don't hurt you as much.
Yeah.
Because you're used to people like we're used to negative comments a lot about your work. Like he's limited in the ring to what he can do, not understanding that, no, that's not what I do. Mm. You know, a guy like me shouldn't be doing a Canadian Destroyer off the top rope just for you to be like, wow, that guy's super athletic. I am not Will Ospreay. I am not Ricochet. I can't do what they do. In fact, they might actually be evil magicians at this point.
Will definitely is.
I think they can levitate. So, I'm a 300-pound man. Like, I think it's just more impressive that I can, like, run the ropes properly sometimes. I'm like, without getting winded. I'm like, give me some credit, people.
When did you start training to wrestle while you were at college or after college? Or
no, so after college, I decided that I'm gonna like pursue my degree. You know, I want to get into politics. Well, I realized I didn't like politics. Working for a few campaigns, I dabbled in some presidential work and all that kind of stuff, and then I realized this isn't gonna work out for me. So I was doing a little bit of, work jobs on the side, and I was really going nowhere. I was kind of in my college town, and like I always say, my buddy ended up playing in the NFL, Tyler Thigpen, and he was actually back, and I don't even know if he even remembers this or that, but we were out, and he was like, well, why don't you do pro wrestling? I was like, well, I didn't get a degree to be pro wrestler. He goes, well, I didn't get a degree to be a quarterback, but that's what I'm doing. It's your dream. What's the worst that's going to happen? So I did a lot of research because I'm that type of guy. I know it's annoying, but I always like, I always like try to find the best rather than, what's out there. I don't want to go with people that are going to give you false promises. I'd rather go with real authentic trainers, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So in 2009, I decided to come to 3D Academy in Kissimmee and get trained by Bubba and Devon. And they'll probably hate me for saying this, but the reason I chose them was they were two guys that were what I perceived as limited in their athletic department and became super successful. I wanted to find out how they made themselves athletic and successful.
Sure.
That's why I chose them. I didn't choose them because I was a huge fan of the Dudley Boys. I chose them because I looked at them and I'm like, these two men were extremely successful. In fact, they're going into the Hall of Fame this WrestleMania.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to know how they did that. What made them find a way to fight the adversity to get there? Because they started in a bingo hall wrestling in front of 50 people.
Sure.
To probably doing one of the most iconic tag matches of all time. When you think TLC, you think them. Mm. There's never been a TLC to match what they did. So I always was I became enamored by the fact that I'm like, how did they do this? So let me tell you, going to 3D is probably one of the toughest schools in the world to be a part of,
right?
Because they expect a lot out of you and they train you hard. So I'm very proud of where I learned to wrestle.
I think as well, I think the having known you for a while, the fact that there's so many people who must just sign up for a wrestling school and just go, oh, this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to do this. and I'm going to go to the nearest possible wrestling school, and it doesn't matter what happens. I just want to train to be a wrestler. Whereas you seem to put that level of research into it to be, it fits the personality I've got to know with you, which is more. I think you're more studious and more considered than the stereotypical wrestler. I think you put a lot of thought and a lot of care into these things. Did you have to move to Florida?
Oh, yeah.
To do it?
I literally got in the car with my dog, left everything that I couldn't fit in my car, and drove to Orlando. I didn't tell my parents. I'm really good at keeping secrets from them, apparently. And I told them that I was going to visit a buddy that I grew up with that lived in Orlando. Hmm. And then I was going to go off to law school. That's what I had planned. But I didn't tell them that I was like, I'm actually trying wrestling school. So, and it was funny. It was like, so I 6 months into it, we took a family trip and I told my mom, and my mom's like, just don't tell your father. Cause it's kind of a crazy thing to tell your parents. It's like, hey, I went to college and all, but now I want to play fight dudes in my underwear. Because that's what they look at it as, if they've never ever seen professional wrestling. They're like, well, come on, because everybody has that notion. Now, seeing that my passion behind it, they're very supportive. But yeah, I moved down with just my dog and my car. I actually have lived out of my car, like atypical pro wrestler, independent pro wrestler, because I spent all my money on pro wrestling school. And when I first moved down here, I went to go visit it with my friend, and it was closed. And the gym that they were in between the gym that was supposed to be there, because originally in the thing, there was a gym there. Hmm. And the gym had, I had actually picked the day that one gym moved out before the other gym moved in.
Sure.
And so it was just this empty thing. And I didn't realize it's in the back. And I was like, oh my God, I lost all my money. yeah, but lo and behold, they were there. I went the next day and they were there, and I was like, whoa, woo. I was like, wow, I definitely got worked on this one.
What was when you first started training, what was the hardest thing to pick up? Because, like, just because you're an athlete doesn't, and you've got an athletic background, it doesn't mean that wrestling's easy. Some people find it super hard to pick up. So what was the hardest thing for you to sort of grasp when you started training?
Well, three things were hard for me to grasp. Mm-hmm. One, I was older going into training. I had already graduated college. A lot of the guys are much younger. And this is the video game generation. But I'm used to a sports locker room, and I was coming from college. So I come off to them. They don't know how to take me.
Sure.
It was very hard for me because I wasn't as athletically inclined as the younger guys were, because I came from a football background. So I'm already heavy. At this time, I was 345 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I'm coming from being an offensive lineman where I'm just – my main thing is pushing people around and my strength, to having to move around the ring doing, moves that I had never done before. And a lot of these guys pick it up faster because this is the only thing they've ever done. They've never participated in any other sport.
Yeah.
This has always been the one thing they have focused on. So, they and a lot more, and especially when you're a little bit littler, it's a little bit easier to hit a drop kick than it is at 345 pounds to learn a drop kick. So the first part of wrestling school was probably the hardest for me. The first 6 months,
sure.
I couldn't do anything right. I literally couldn't do anything right. Especially, and Bubba would tell me, I can't do anything right. he let me know. but I've always had I'm one of those people that, I drive myself. I don't need, I knew signing up, this wrestling for me wasn't a race.
Sure.
I'm not going to get signed. Even if I was ever signed, I'm not going to get signed on day one, day two, month one, month two. Mm. It's going to take years for me. I knew that going in. I knew my dream is a marathon.
Yeah.
And if I could last long enough, because this, what people don't understand, this business is very hard. You have a lot of highs, but you have devastating lows.
Mm.
And if it's injury or somebody rips the rug right out from under you when you're really close to doing something very important, you know, a lot of people, especially fans, don't understand what we go through,
sure.
You know, especially with family. It's hard to explain to your other half that you're driving 17 hours to work 5 minutes.
Mm.
It's hard to leave your other half if you have relationships, and especially when you're older and you're supposed and, you know, you do the atypical thing, go to a 9-to-5 every day.
Yeah.
It's hard. So, you know, I knew going in that this was going to be hard. So, I had a lot of, it took me a very long time before I was free to do the indies. It took me a year.
Yeah.
I went every day. I went Monday through Friday every day. From I got there at 11 and I left there at 11 at night, Monday through Friday.
Wow.
For a year.
That's proper commitment,
still,
though, man.
And I still was terrible.
But I think that's such sound advice, the whole it's not a sprint, because, you know, I've been to wrestling schools here in the UK and I watch someone who's been training for maybe 3 months and then they'll send me a DM on Twitter saying, how do I get booked by Progress? And it's like, well, like, you have to be one of the very best in the country to get booked by us. Like, yeah. You know, it's not, I'm sure you will be one day, but you've been doing this 3 months and you've maybe had two matches, you know, come back in a couple of years, but it's not, just try to get better all the time. And that's enough. You know, that's what, it's such sound advice for people when they're starting out. I think I do like the fact you mentioned Bubba sort of telling you that you weren't very good. I mean, some people thrive on, it's not the motivation behind it, but some people would prefer always to be told bluntly that they're not good enough rather than have someone say, oh, it's fine. Do you think having that sort of harsh criticism help make you better?
Oh, yeah. It helps you deal with everything that happens in the wrestling world.
Mm.
I don't like, I've never been a guy that likes people sugarcoating things or blowing smoke up my ass. Mm. I'd rather you tell me you're not going to book me because you don't think I'm good.
Mm.
Because that's going to give me motivation to prove to the world that, yeah, you made a mistake on me. Mm. I am good. And I am going to do this. I use it as motivation rather than, oh my God, this guy thinks I'm terrible.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? At one time, somebody thought that guy was terrible.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. It's like, but I got that, you know, I was lucky to have awesome parents and be part of sports. And I think sports actually helped me in that opportunity, because the one thing I learned about sports is you're never as special as you think you are. And there's never not an opportunity for you.
Mm.
So if you think you're special and you don't want to work hard anymore, there's somebody else behind you willing to take your spot.
Yeah.
And I always knew that in any profession. So when people tell me I'm not good, I'm one of those people that I know my limitations, but I'm going to work so they're not limitations anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. How long from when you started training to your first match?
So after a year, I think Bubba got tired of me, because how 3D works is, Devon teaches you the moves.
Yeah.
He has the patience of a saint.
Mm.
Cause he'll be like, okay, well, that arm drag wasn't an arm drag. I don't exactly know what that was, but you know, we got you to go over. Okay, so now that you went over, we'll work on it. We'll work on it. Let's try it again. Where Bubba expects you to already know an arm drag,
mm.
Like he's like, I showed you how to do it. Why didn't you do it?
Yeah.
Like, so, but they move Bubba to what Bubba's really good at. Bubba's brilliant when it comes to psychology.
Sure.
Absolutely brilliant. Like, and so is Devon, and that was the coolest thing about it, was you get two different perspectives on psychology of professional wrestling, because they tell you, this is just my opinion, it doesn't mean it's right. But when it comes to psychology and a storytelling in a match, they're absolutely brilliant. Just the stuff that I learned. But I learned the little one of the little tricks is, when Bubba gets angry, he tells you more information. So, and the good thing about me was I was always making Bubba angry. I think I could have gave Bubba a heart attack. How much he yelled at me. It's just me. But I got to learn that way because Bubba would always give me more information how to do things right.
Yeah.
So now I know all this stuff in the back of my head. So finally, after the first year, he's like, I finally gave him a character. Like, I was going to do a comedy character.
Mm.
And he's like, fine. Go do it. Do it. just do it. And so I went out and I was actually very good at doing comedy. I love comedy. I love making kids laugh.
Mm.
I like telling stories. So, and it gave, doing comedy gave me the unique ability to try everything outside the box in wrestling.
Yeah.
I wasn't stuck with A, B, C, D, E, F, G. This is how a match should go. I was like, okay, let's have a playground street fight. You know, so, and the concept was, you can only use things you would find on a playground.
Makes sense.
So I didn't. Yeah. So I would do the Mick Foley spot with the thumbtacks, but it would be Legos, army men, and gummy bears. I had before the Elite was using the bear, I had Stone Cold Bear. He would come out and Stone Cold stutter people in the middle of my match. He was also my Ralphus. He came as a security guard because what would a giant 5-year-old have as a security guard? His teddy bear.
Yeah,
so absolutely. It was a guy in a giant teddy bear outfit that came to the ring with me. You know, where else would that work in professional wrestling?
Correct.
So, you know, but I got to have a Star Wars match with stormtroopers. Darth Vader levitated me. me and EC3 did a whole John Cena-esque match. Like, I got to do things that were literally outside the box.
Yeah.
But it also limited to me where I could be booked.
Of course.
Because top promotions tend to not book comedy.
Yeah.
Which is sad sometimes because wrestling is a circus and everything has a place.
Yeah, you need the clown, you need the clowns as well as you need the trapeze act, don't you?
Exactly. Do. If you have all the trapeze, everybody's a trapeze artist. I'm like, okay, well, I have to watch this for, like, okay, I just saw that the last match.
Mm.
You know, you need everything. You need the bears, the lions, tigers, and bears. You need the magic show. You need stuff because wrestling is for everyone, and I'm a big proponent of that. Wrestling is for everyone. That's the coolest thing about wrestling. You could be the poorest person or the richest person and still sit in the front row and boo and cheer the same guy.
Yeah.
The same way, because wrestling doesn't discriminate. Actual pro wrestling doesn't discriminate. That's why I love professional wrestling. So, you know, being my Mikey character gave me the unique perspective of seeing what works and what doesn't work and what makes people cheer and boo. Mm. So the only problem was I stayed in a little bit too long.
Yeah. I mean, when was the point where you went from that character to the character that you are today?
So, leading up to it, there's been things in wrestling that I never thought I'd have the opportunity to do.
Mm.
So no matter what happens from this point on, I've done a lot. So I've got the opportunity to do extra work. I did Aces and Eights. It was such a learning experience. You know, I learned how to get heat in the locker room. That's right. This guy did.
I mean, if you can you say what you did?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I could totally say it because it's out there. You can actually watch it. Oh, you know, God. So when you're young, I should have never had the opportunities I did. Mm-hmm. But being here in Orlando and Bubba was in there, you know, you get calls because you're right here. Mm-hmm. And so we got calls. We did a lot. I was Bobby Roode's security. I was Bischoff's best friend. You know, I got to do cool stuff at TNA. And then this Aces and Eights thing came up.
Right.
And they're like, hey, we need extra. Well, every day I kept getting booked for it for the whole run before they revealed everybody. But I was like, oh my God, this is a huge break. Not understanding, like, cause you're excited. This is something new. You're on TV. You know, you might be in a mess, but you're getting opportunities to be in the ring with Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Sting, Kurt Angle, Hulk Hogan. Like, I don't care who you are, in a little bit in your head, you're kind of marking out. Yeah. You're like,
oh, absolutely,
I can't believe this is really happening, that I'm getting hit with a chair by Sting, you know? So did I take it the right way? No, I wanted to show that I could be here, that I could hang. Mm. And I stepped on a few toes that, you know, I didn't take my role the way I should, you know. I was more, I think a lot of it is the fact that I am a little bit older. So I talk when I shouldn't have talked. Mm. And so that got me a lot of heat, you know. I wanted to be on camera, you know. I would put myself in positions, and it was wrong, and I shouldn't have done it, you know. But I didn't know back then, like I do now. So everything's a learning experience, and you take it and you learn from it. I also had the most heat I ever got was what is their names? I was supposed to do a Santa segment for them. And it was me, Christopher Daniels and Kazarian. And we were doing this and the cowboy James Storm.
Yeah.
And I had to be Santa, but I had to be a rude Santa for them. But I didn't know what to say because nobody ever really told me. They said kind of wing it. So yeah. I was like, okay, I'll wing it. And I'm kind of a naturally witty guy when you give me one answer responses. Mm. And I had been doing comedy on the independent scene, so it kind of comes naturally to me. So James was like, I'll say this, you say this, I'll say this, you say this. Well, I said it, and they thought I was like going into business for myself.
Oh, God.
And so they were so upset, and I'm like, and to this day I haven't got the opportunity to apologize to them, because I never meant to be disrespectful whatsoever. Like, I was just winging it because I didn't know what to say. Like, I didn't want to just sit there and not answer, because I was like, if I didn't say anything, I'm gonna get in trouble. You know, like, so all I said was one word answers, but everybody would laugh. And I'm like, and so they're like, thought I was talking too much, which I totally understand now, being in the business way longer. But I was only really only in the business about 2.5 years.
Sure.
So I didn't know really anything. So yeah, I was a heat seeking missile.
I find so hard to believe, having met you, like one of the least offensive people I've ever met.
But at the time too, I was also in a very bad period of my life. That's when everything was coming crashing down on me, and my depression, and I was gaining weight, and like being closeted was getting to me. My world was falling apart, and I had nobody to talk to. So decisions I was making weren't the best decisions, because my judgment was clouded in everything I did, because the only thing I cared about was people not finding out I was gay. And at that level, right around that time, was my breaking point.
So. No, I mean, this is something that I know you've brought up in interviews as well. But was this around the time that you undertook conversion therapy?
So right before the TNA, I tried the conversion therapy. So right before I did the Aces and Eights, and then shortly after we were all let go, that's when I like, and I talk about it in interviews too, because it goes hand in hand, is I'm not suicidal, but I did try to take my life because I was so depressed and everything had gotten to me, you know, and I do like to talk about it because people don't understand what it's like to be closeted and what the feeling's like. I explain it like this. It's like having all the friends in the world, but you're the most alone you'll ever feel. So I couldn't tell people what I was going through. And, you know, so it all kind of got to me. So that period of time when I was doing all the TNA stuff was actually the worst period of my life. And then I added on top of it that everybody hated me. And I'm like, great. This is good. You're doing stellar, Mike. Really winning with this wrestling thing.
The conversion therapy thing's an unusual thing. I've got a friend in this country who's nothing to do with wrestling, just someone I've known for about a decade, who he's from a Catholic background, and his parents, who he's not particularly close to, sent him to, he was out, but they sent him to conversion therapy even though he was out. Which I remember him telling me about, and me finding it particularly sort of horrific and draconian. And it must have been such a, obviously there must have been part of you that wanted to try and get through it because you thought that would make your life better. But equally, going through that experience must have been something that eventually brought you around to coming out, if that makes sense.
Well, I was one of the oldest people there. I put myself into it because I didn't want to be gay. I was looking for anything, even if it was I was desperate. I didn't want to be gay. I wanted to feel like my friends. I wanted to feel normal. If that makes sense. Sure. You know, now that I look at it, I know I'm normal. Like, but then you tell yourself all these negative things. You paint a picture of, once you say the words "I'm gay," your life is over.
Sure.
Like, you paint yourself that picture, especially as a closet athlete, especially as a professional wrestler. You paint this picture that the world is going to end the moment you do it. So you look for opportunities to maybe not have that happen. So that's why I chose it. But I chose to leave. And I'm going to say this, like I always say, nobody there was negative towards me. I didn't get laser shocked or anything like that. I chose one that was purposely confidential, silent. But I did see, it was the first time in my life that I knew I wasn't alone, that other people thought the way I did in their head, you know, that people had the same feelings for other men that I did. Because truthfully, I never had gay friends. Maybe I didn't know, or, you know, but I was never in the gay community. So I didn't know the gay lifestyle. So you know, I never had anybody to talk to.
Yeah.
But after a while, learning that, you know, their main thesis was, you know, trying to get you to date girls, I'm like, I didn't have a problem dating girls. I'm like, you know, I don't have that problem. I'm like, I just don't like them or have any emotional attraction. How do you fix that? Well, you know, one of the things where you're going to have to work harder at it, pray. I was like, oh, okay. Well, praying is not a magical wish. praying is praying is a conversation with God. It's not a wish. He's not a genie. You know, like, if he was, I'd be making a hell of a lot more wishes. you know, send that WWE contract over my way. You know, apparently, that doesn't work. Trust me, I've tried. So once I realized their philosophy was extremely flawed, I left. But, you know, I can't say whether it works or it doesn't work because I didn't complete it. But I say it, why it didn't work for me. And decisions you make, I never regret. You know, the only one thing now that I wish I came out sooner. I wish I was me sooner, because I wonder what I would be like, how far I would be in my career. Because the one thing that held me back in everything I've ever done in life was the fact that I was in the closet.
Sure.
My fear held me back, because since I've come out to my friends and family, I've seen ultimate success in my career. I'm a better worker. I am a better friend. I'm a better person, because I don't longer have that fear on my back.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, man. But can you remember the first person you sort of came out to within wrestling? Because obviously, yes, you mentioned that people in the locker room have known about it for some time. But
yeah, the first person I ever came out to was my manager at Evolve, Daniel Drennan. He's the first person that I ever had the courage to come out to. It was funny. Was like, I had invited him out. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna tell him. So I literally, we went out. I started getting drunk, because how do you tell your friend, like, hey, bro, everything you known about me, I'm gay, you know? So I didn't know how to do it. So we go the whole night, we're leaving, and, we're getting in our rides to leave. And I tell somebody, I'll be like, I have to go talk to him. So I go to talk to him. He gives me a hug and he's like, I'll see you tomorrow. I have to tell you something. He's like, can this wait? And I started breaking down. I'm like, no, it can't. And I blurted out that I'm gay. And he goes, bro, that's never, nobody's ever going to believe that. Stop trying stupid stories that aren't going to work for you. He literally thought I was trying to pitch a wrestling storyline.
The joy of professional wrestling.
No, I'm not pitching a wrestling storyline. I'm really gay. And I started crying. And what people know about me is like, I don't cry. I'm not a crier. Mm. Like, even people have watched me get busted open, broken ribs, all this kind of stuff, especially in wrestling, and work through it.
Yeah.
But that's why he knew something was wrong and something was up. He's like, are you crying? And I'm like, you don't understand. And I'm like, he's like, and he just hugged me. He's like, bro, that's awesome. I don't care that you're gay. He goes, that's a good thing. He's like, who knows? And I was like, you're the only one that knows. And he's like, okay. So, and the awkwardness about it was, we didn't get to see each other for like 2 weeks. So of course in my head, I'm like, he hates me now. He's never going to talk to me again. It was just, we were different area. Like our jobs didn't line up. So we couldn't hang out the following week. So of course I made it up in my head that he hated me. And then he was like, no, I don't hate you. I just went about, you're normal. Like, was it supposed to change? Was I supposed to be like, are you dying or something? So he's the first worker and first person to ever know that I was gay, besides my fiance.
You see, and that's the thing. So you've been, how long have you been with your fiance now?
4.5 years.
So you were with him before you started coming out to...
Oh, yeah. My fiance is a trooper. I told him when I first met him, he would never meet anybody. The only time he could come over is the cover of night. And I'm probably not... I'm never coming out to anyone. Imagine telling your other half that you can't meet any of their friends, family, coworkers, nothing. You don't exist. The only time you can come over is when it's pitch black out, and I'm going to sneak you in.
Yeah.
It's
proof that he loves you, dude. I mean, that's something.
Yeah. And what happened with that was we were seeing each other for 2 weeks, and I'm not very good with stuff doesn't offend me. So sometimes I figure it just doesn't offend other people. And we got into a fight because he was telling his little brother he shouldn't say something is gay. He goes, that's wrong. That hurts people's feelings. And I was like, no, that video game was probably gay. And he got really upset with me because I didn't understand what he was saying at the time. And he didn't talk to me for 3 weeks.
Whoa,
because I was being bullheaded and I wasn't going to call him because I'm not going to apologize. I didn't do anything wrong. it was the worst 3 weeks of my life. That's how I knew I loved the kid. Mm. And so when he actually did call me, he's like, you're not going to, he called me 3 weeks later and he was like, you weren't going to call me. And I was like, no, I didn't do anything wrong. Meanwhile, I was like, I totally wanted to call him. I wanted to call him right after it happened. And so I told myself, I said, listen, you know, if you want to keep this kid, you're going to have to start making, you know, you have to work towards this.
Yeah.
Do you want to be out? So I told him, I'm like, listen, I'm going to go out on a real first date with you. They were the worst first dates ever, but they were, I did go on a date. Let's see what happened. Our first date, I was on my phone the whole time. Cause I didn't know what to say to him. I'm like, how do you date a dude? Our second date, we went to a gay bar and I first had a panic attack before going. So I drank a lot because it was the first gay bar I'd ever been to. And I was waiting in line, ended up getting into a fight cause a kid punched me in the face. And yeah. And so he comes out of the bathroom and security surrounding me, everybody's screaming. Yeah, it looked like the Hulk just beat up everybody. There's blood on me. Like, he's like, what? Stop. And then our third date, we went to a bar and I accidentally got roofied because there was a frat party going on in the bar. And I picked up a girl's drink that wasn't my drink, drank it. And I literally, I'm a big man and I only had one drink, but he doesn't know that I was kind of roofied at the time. He just thought maybe I was like taking drugs or something. So now he has this opinion of me. I'm like, why is this all happening? So it was literally like I say, I am lucky that he stayed with me because everything in that thing was like, wow, I really need to leave. If it was me, I'd be like, wow, this is epically terrible.
Oh my God, they're amazing stories. I think you're the second guest on this podcast to have been on Good Morning Britain. I wish you could be the first one. But Zach Gibson, Zach Gibson's been on it, I think. Now, my biggest sadness
British,
was
though. I'm American.
Precisely, which is much. Well, when you messaged me and said I'm on this thing called Good Morning Britain, I messaged you back going, "What the fuck?" which is such a cool thing because you know it's a proper mainstream TV program here. And the one thing that makes me really sad was you weren't on with Piers Morgan, were you? Who is a presenter?
I was not on with Piers Morgan. I did. I think originally I was supposed to be on Piers Morgan. But there was some kind of political thing going on at the time, so I actually had to be moved 2 weeks.
Yeah,
and
I remember.
It fell on when Ben and Kate were the hosts, who are awesome people, by the way. The whole experience back there was a riot. It was probably the funniest experience because I'm an independent wrestler, so I'm used to literally sharing hotel rooms or sleeping on floors, or you know, they flew me over. They got me a driver all the way to this expensive hotel, but the hotel was literally a block away from the TV studio. So I was like, oh, I'll walk. I'll totally walk over there. And they're like, oh no, we'll drive you over. I'm like, you bought a car for me to go a block? in my head, I was like, maybe they don't think I'm smart. maybe they think I'm gonna get lost somehow. Like it's literally it's less than a block from the hotel. So I get there and I'm like I go through security and the guy's like, hi, the security guards, he's like, how can I help you? I'm like, I think I'm supposed to be on the TV show. He's like, oh okay, hold on. I went to the wrong side door. So they were right. They were right that they needed to bring me a car because I went to the wrong side door.
Oh, Ben, I know Ben's a good dude because Ben's actually, he's been, we filmed something with someone that Ben presents a TV program with, a football show here, ages ago, and he was really, really cool about that. And
soccer show.
Yeah, and he's just a, you know, he's a good dude. I think when, I remember, I think I was telling my wife that you were on it, and she was like, I hope he's on with Piers Morgan. Just want to see someone powerbomb Piers Morgan. Which is a shame. It's a missed opportunity that you didn't get the powerbomb Piers Morgan, but it also probably means that you didn't have to put up with him being a dick to you.
You know what's funny is I was more nervous to be on with Ben and Kate than I was Piers Morgan.
Really?
Yeah, because I know what Piers Morgan is. Hmm. You know, this is I'm a pro wrestler, you know what I mean? Hmm. People like him are all over our business.
Sure.
So I can deal with him, but when people are like nice, like Ben and Kate, I'm like, okay, what's going to happen? Like, you don't know what they're going to like really ask you. And I'm like, I get what Piers, like, I can predict what Piers would say or act or do, sure, because that's who Piers is.
Yeah.
But then you get Ben and Kate, and I'm like, I don't know who Ben and Kate are. So I'm doing all this like research going on the show, being like, okay, because I don't want to look like a fool that I don't know who Ben and Kate were. Because, like I asked you, I'm like, who are, what's this show? Because I'm American. I don't know what Good Morning Britain is. I know who Piers Morgan is because he was the dude that took over for Larry King.
Yeah.
And he was on a lot of shows in America. So I got who Piers Morgan was. But then when I get there and it's Ben and Kate, I'm like, oh no, what do I do? Because I'm a big believer, it's very disrespectful if you're going to somebody else's, say, promotion or program, and you don't know anything about them. I think that's a little disrespectful. So I try to find out stuff about them. And then I find out that he's on, like, the cover of Muscle and Fitness. I'm like, great. I was like, sweet. They got the Muscle and Fitness model, and then they got the sweetest lady next to me. I'm like, yeah, yeah, I'm going to look like a giant ogre on British television.
I thought you came across wonderfully. And I think, have you found that, this is the thing I talk about a lot, in that I'm very open, I have bipolar disorder, so I'm very open about talking about it. And I'm very open about the fact I'm an alcoholic and stuff like that. And I find that I get a lot of people DM me on Twitter or send me messages just asking for advice or saying that something I've said has meant something to them, which means the world to me. I mean, have you found that you've sort of reached a whole sort of new audience by being so cool about coming out?
Yes. It's been literally, and I said it on Twitter, it's been the most humbling experience of my life.
Hmm.
Just the messages, kids asking me how did they come out to their teammates, that people sharing their coming out stories with me. I'm still going through messages. I think I've had up to 20,000 messages.
Whoa.
between Twitter, Facebook, emails. People every day I get a new message. I just read your story. I live in Finland. Thank you. People that are in countries where you can't be gay or they'll kill you have sent me messages. So for them to take the time, if somebody read that they could go to jail, just to tell me that my story helped them feel not alone. It's unreal. It's humbling. And, you know, and sometimes you don't know what to say to people, like in certain situations. You know, one guy told me he's straight and he shared a story. He goes, because you shared your story, I want to share my story with you. He's like, his fiance had died in a car accident, and wrestling was something that they bonded with. And now seeing me and Odinson there, and he really had liked us. And then when that story came out, he goes, I wanted to share with you something because I know that was hard for you. This is hard for me. Thank you for what you do. And just, you know, people that do that, it's unreal. Like that, you know, hearing that my article was shared millions of times worldwide is just mind blowing.
Yeah.
Like, even after being on Good Morning Britain and having everybody that program reach send messages of support, of you know, their idea or their wishes, how they wish things would be. You know, it's crazy. I will never not be humbled by every message that I get, because, you know, it's important for people to listen. Mm. And it's important for people to feel that they're not alone. And, you know, I try to read every message that's sent to me. You know, I might not be able to respond to every one of them because there's so many, sure. But I do read them. I do take the time. And, you know, multiple times, a lot of those messages have brought me to tears because they are just overwhelmingly some sad stories and what happened to them. And, and people just thanking you. And I'm like, I didn't go through any of that. I feel, you know, how can I help you? You know, those sort of situations, it makes me feel like I did the right thing.
I think 100% you did the right thing. I think it's one of my favorite stories to have come out of wrestling in the last few years. I just think it's seeing the positive response that you've got is just, I've been blown away by it. And I'm someone who's just on the fringes of it as someone who knows you. And I think it's such a cool story, which is why I wanted to have you on to chat today.
Well, one of the most amazing things was you have, like, I had emailed you and I told you, you have an awesome roster. I would say so many people from your roster that don't even know me, that might not even know my work, all reached out to me and said something kind.
Yeah, that's really
cool. And, you know, they don't have to do that. Do you know what I mean? So to see the support I've had in professional wrestling, not only from the fans, but from everybody that I work with or trying to work with, has been crazy. Like, something I didn't know was going to happened, and it's a pleasant surprise. It's like when you get people reaching out to you and saying thank you, or people being like, yeah, I support you, man, this is a good thing. You know, that's a, you know, wrestling is, it shows you wrestling is different. And, you know, I think that's why the independents are so successful now. A lot of guys are working together instead of against each other.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it's all very positive and very lovely. And you're coming here in April, aren't you? Well, I'm not here. I'm away in America and Australia, but you're here.
Yeah, you're going to be in Australia, but I am there April 16th in Brighton, 17th in Liverpool, and 18th in London. I'm going to actually be with Jack.
You are indeed. Mr. Sexsmith will be with you, won't he? So
yeah, it's our inclusivity tour, as we say. You know, Jack does a lot for charity out there, and you know, I do a lot. Try to do a lot for charity here, because you know, we like to, if you have the opportunity and the ability to give back, I think people should.
Yeah,
and me and Jack have been talking, and we're looking forward to working together.
And you guys are basically, you're doing, rather than wrestling, you're doing sort of spoken word stuff, aren't you, I believe? Is that?
Yeah, we're doing question and answer. We're doing storytelling. We want people to get, me and Jack are very fan friendly.
Yes.
We like people's opinions. We want to debate stuff. We want to talk about stuff. We want stuff out in the open. Because you can't have a conversation if you never start it. So what we want to do is start a conversation about LGBT matters. You know, we want to start, why isn't there an LGBT storyline in pro wrestling? Why isn't there? You know, we want fans, we want people to come there and get to meet us and understand who we are.
I think the whole... It's such a nice thing to try and do something that is about inclusivity as well, because knowing that Jack's really into it and knowing that you are, I think it, and again, the fact that this one interview, you doing this one interview has kind of, it's afforded you this opportunity, because if you hadn't have done that interview, then this, your profile wouldn't be at a point where this would be possible. And I think it's such conclusive proof that you doing the interview was the right thing to do.
It's funny. It's because before I did the interview, guys told me to do it. But, Gabe and Court Bauer here, those are the two major promotions, MLW mm-hmm. and Evolve, that I work for here over in the United States. And I went to them before and I said, hey, I have this interview. Because what happened was, so the guy that did the interview, David Hudson, he followed me on Instagram and was like, then followed me on Facebook and then saw me, I put my proposal up on Facebook. Mm. And on my Facebook is just people that I'm friends with, sure. It's workers and people that are close to me. So I didn't hide who I was on there. But fans didn't know. And he asked me, he's like, do the fans know? And I was like, no, sir, they do not. I just, I'm open, but I haven't told them. Hmm. And he's like, can I do an interview with you? And so I was like, I don't know. So I asked my core group of guys, I told Odinson and them that, hey, should I do this interview? And they're like, yeah, do the interview. And then I asked, guys that I trusted, like Martin Stone and all that. And Martin was the first one to be like, you need to do the interview.
Yeah, he's a good guy, Martin.
This is important. He goes, because your story is different. People need to know that you are. Hmm. You have the – he goes, if you have the ability to help people, you should do it.
Absolutely.
And it was great advice, and so I decided to do the interview. And I'll tell you, I thought he hated my story. I honestly thought he hated my story. I was like, oh, this guy, I thought he was going to expect that I had all these negative things happen to me. And I told him a kind of a different story. Yeah. And when he got off with me, I was like, okay. And it took like five weeks before they printed it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. And then it happened when we were home at Christmas, December 27th, the article came out. Mm-hmm. And literally Morgan, my fiance, goes, what's happening? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, everybody's hitting me up on Facebook and sharing this story about you. And I was like, and then I look on my Twitter and I have, it's up to like, at that point, it was up to 6,000 people. Mm. Now it's up to 8,000 people. And I'm like, okay, whoa. like, what's happening? Then I get all these emails and I'm like, and then Facebook contacted me and they're like, who are you? Because I reached my maximum everything in less than 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And like, I was on all these LGBT sites, people were debating what I said, and I'm like, whoa, what is happening? And like, it took me back a second, and then I went from there, because I honestly didn't think that, I thought the wrestling people would pick it up, but yeah. I didn't think the world would pick it up.
I think that's the cool thing.
Does that make sense?
That's the cool thing, is that it I had a friend of mine who knows nothing about wrestling but knows that I love wrestling send me the article saying, have you seen this? And I could reply and go, yeah, I know the guy. But it was really cool that it did. It was going over the boundaries of just wrestling fans. And that's the sign that something very positive is happening. And like you were saying, if you're getting people contacting you who are, not necessarily in wrestling, but maybe in a football team and want to know how to come out to their teammates, that's, you're doing something really positive for everybody, rather than just for our little niche of professional wrestling, which is, it's such a cool thing. And I'm really pleased that it's worked out in the way that it has. And
it's still, like I said, it still surprises me. Mm. Especially when guys have come out since the article and have said it was because my article has helped them. Mm. And, so no matter what happened, it's worth it, because mm. I helped them be them,
yeah.
Just to hear. And it was just hearing as somebody is like them. Yeah. So that's one of the most important things from, I hope people get from the article is the only thing I was trying to do was to show people that they're not alone by sharing what happened to me. Mm. You know, this isn't anybody else's story. It's just my story.
Yeah.
And if my story can help a 14-year-old not want to take his own life because he feels like he's alone and feels like he has nobody to talk to, he has somebody to talk to. Mm. There's somebody like him. There's somebody like everybody.
Yeah.
You know, you're not alone, and there's people that can help you.
Now, the article, this is the last thing I'm going to ask you about, but the the article is the coolest thing. Like, I've known you for a year now, and the coolest thing I know about you, the coolest thing that anyone I know has done in a long time is that article and all the stuff that's gone around it since. Before the article came out, the coolest thing that you'd ever done for me was get me a crate of salted caramel Monster.
your obsession. Yes.
Yeah. You're one of the main reasons that the obsession exists, because obviously I was enjoying that stuff in Orlando and you latched onto it, and I think you knew a dude who managed to hook me up with some. I think that's how it worked.
The story is, you were, can we say bitching on your podcast about the fact that Monster Energy Drink didn't have your salted caramel energy, which I think is nasty, by the way. But Monster, if you're listening to this podcast, sponsor this poor man because he needs it. But I had a friend that was a rep for Monster Energy Drink, and I asked him, I'm like, hey, so I have a friend who has... So, the first batch I sent you was taken by customs.
Yes, it was.
And you returned to me. So I had to find the way to get your stuff to a case of it for you to New York.
Mm.
The first case I got you, apparently, the great empire you live in decided that salted caramel Monster drinks are not for the British.
Yes.
And they confiscated them.
Yes.
So I had to find a way to get to you Monster salted caramel energy drink, which is still terrible. I have no idea why anybody, first of all, salted caramel is terrible, period. And I don't know why you would ever think it's not.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Second of all, that as an energy drink, bro.
And that's the best part of this is all the time while you were telling me you were getting at me, you were reminding me that it was terrible.
It's like literally they made the worst flavor, and the one person that wants it, I'm like, what? First of all, it's like, hey, I made this drink. It tastes like terrible, and it's an energy drink. You should drink it. And I was like, I don't even. How did you even walk into actually, the question's for you. When you're in Orlando, did you just walk into a store and be like, "Damn, that drink looks amazing"?
Yeah, dude.
Like, there's so many more drinks that I'm like, that looks refreshing. But salted caramel anything doesn't sound refreshing whatsoever.
So I don't really drink coffee. Like John and Glenn, the other guys behind Progress, do drink a lot of coffee. I don't particularly care for it, but I love salted caramel stuff. And I, you know, because you live in Orlando, you probably, I don't know if you stayed in the same hotel as everybody when we were in Orlando last year, but the WWM
hotel. I was lucky enough that I actually lived by the venue at the time.
So the hotel was right next to a 7-Eleven, and one night I went into the 7-Eleven in my ludicrous Mustang that I'd hired so I could feel like a rock star for a few days. And I pulled in there and I got some gas, and I went in and I bought pretzels, which you can buy in less frequency in this country than you can in the States. So I bought a load of pretzels.
You guys have a shortage of pretzels too?
They're just not as popular here as they are there, and I love pretzels.
How are they not popular? They're pretzels.
You can find them here, but not like chocolate covered ones and stuff, so, you know.
Well, next time you book Walter, tell him to bring you a bag of pretzels from Germany.
So we So I got some pretzels and I got various other snacks. And then I was looking in the fridge. I was like, I'm going to get myself a can of energy drink for in the morning because I think that it was the next day was our show. So I looked in the fridge and saw Salted Caramel Monster, and I waited until the next morning. I drank it and then had 2 cans of it a day for the rest of my time while I was in America.
We didn't sleep for multiple days. People need to know that about WrestleMania weekend.
Yes.
WrestleMania weekend, if you're a wrestler, you do not sleep. It's you're literally running on, by the last day, you don't want to talk to any, by the time WrestleMania actually happens, you don't want to be like awake. You're so tired that you're like, I just want this week to end. I do understand the fact that you were drinking, because I was drinking multiple Red Bulls. If I was ever to get my blood pressure taken by the last day, I swear to God, they would be like, "How are you alive?" Because I was just living off of Red Bulls.
It's weird in that I don't have caffeine the rest of the time. So people often see me at a Progress show with, I normally drink Monster Ultra, the white sort of carbonated one. So I often drink that on show days, and people, like Progress fans, will bring me a can of it if they know that I've just flown in that morning or something. But caffeine's a thing I use if I've got a drive for 4 hours or whatever. I don't get up in the morning. Like today, I didn't get up with my son and have a cup of coffee. It's like, no, I'm not working today, so no coffee today. But that salted caramel stuff and the crate that eventually found its way to New York for me, I was drinking like. Because I thought, well, I'm in the States for a bit, so I'm just going to try and drink as much of this as possible while I'm here. So I ended up drinking like at least a can a day while I was there. And I offered it to John and to Glenn, and both of them were in this agreement with you that it's disgusting. But for me,
I agree with them. Thank you. Like. Listen to your you know what? Listen to your business partners and friends. They're telling you the right thing to do. You probably should step away from the salted caramel energy drink because it is terrible. It's a thing that will never catch on anywhere. There's a reason for that.
Okay, I will eventually admit defeat on this. Listen, where do people find you on social media?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at Perro. P is in Paul, ARROW _. I know I used an underscore, but that's where you find me on Twitter. And I do answer people. I play with them. I think Twitter's great. I love when wrestlers play with everybody. I think it's a great thing. You can find me on Instagram at Perro49. As you know, I put 49 in kind of anything because of Pulse. And those are my two social medias that I'm mostly on.
Awesome.
I can't figure out Snapchat after its update, so it is dead to me right now until they fix it. Because I feel I'm not inclined to use Snapchat the way it should be.
I can't use Snapchat because I'm nearly 40. I just look at it and go, this is not for me.
You should use Snapchat when you do your. The two things. So, but prior to you coming to WrestleMania weekend. I only knew Progress of what it was, and I saw a little bit of it through social media and all that. But I hadn't had the opportunity to see Progress live. And let me tell you, I was super impressed by your opening of a show. I had never seen it before because a lot of you're a hype guy.
Oh, yeah.
And I've never seen that before. Like, I've seen it kind of with Shakara, but it goes with their whole story.
Yeah.
But I was expecting you to be a ring announcer.
Oh, God, no.
Because I never really saw. And I'm like, that's not you. And I was like, you look like a terrible ring announcer, but I'm going to see where this goes. Like, maybe he's going to surprise me. And then I have to tell you, man, I thoroughly enjoyed your opening. I was like, I felt like... The cool thing about Progress, and I'm not saying this to put you over. I'm just saying the cool thing I like about Progress, it's like a rock show.
Yeah, that's what it's meant to be.
Well, that's what I said. It's like you come out before the DJ comes out, and you're like, I want all you to get on your feet. Get ready. I didn't know what to expect. After you start doing that, because I expect you to be like, our first bout. And then you come out, and you're like, spitting out what the rules of progress are, and I was like, holy shit, what's going on here? I was like, don't be a dick. And I was like, okay. I was like, what's going to happen? And then I didn't know that your wrestlers have songs, not theme songs. Like, the fans sing songs. So I'm sitting there, and the fans are singing songs like it's a soccer game. And I'm like, where did you all learn these songs? I'm like, is there a sheet? Did they hand out a program? I was like, so those are the two interesting things. Like, I love going to promotions and finding out different nuances that make them different. And that was the two things that stood out to me about Progress and seeing a Progress show on WrestleMania weekend was you. And I was expecting something totally different. I was like, because I had talked like you saw me in a suit. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And you didn't know that I was a wrestler to the last day. And you're like, oh my God, this guy's he's on the Evolve show. I didn't even know. And I'm like, and then you walk out and you're in the ring, and I'm like, okay, what's going to happen here? I was like, he's not dressed to announce a match, so... And then you just go off, and I just start losing it. I was like, okay, this is hilarious. Is anybody... Okay, all you are watching it, but let me explain something. This is hilarious. So, and then people start singing songs, and I'm like, Havoc, they're all chanting. I'm like, whoa, where did Jimmy Havoc get a cool chant like that? And I was like, I'm jealous over here being like, I don't got a chant. How do I get a chant? How do I get a song? Do they write you songs? And I have all these questions. I was like, British fans are amazing.
Well, what I'll do is I'll put in the information about the podcast, I'll put a link for your little tour that you're doing while you're here. So people can come and see you, so people can get a link to that. Obviously, I'll make sure people follow you on Twitter and on Instagram, etc. as well. But I'm very much looking for... I will see you in a few weeks, because I presume our paths will cross in New Orleans. I'm very much looking forward to seeing you. I'll take you out for a salted caramel monster.
I'm not drinking a salted caramel monster. I'm probably going to throw it in the garbage right after you hand it to me. I don't think I could give it away. Like, literally, you're the only person I could give it to. So it'll be regifted for Christmas.
I said this to a lot of people. Like, I spoke to Joey Janela recently, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing him when I come over. But I'm really looking forward to seeing you, because I know how much has changed for you over the past year. So I'm really looking forward to seeing you and catching up in person. And thank you for chatting to me today, man.
I'm looking forward to see you guys, because it was fun meeting all you guys last year and seeing all your different personalities and knowing how different you guys are and how you guys work together. It was interesting seeing everything, and I'm really interested to see you. And Joey Janela is a shit show and a half and the most fun to be around. So his spring break is going to be you were at the spring break last year. The spring break this year is going to be just as insane. So I understand where you want to meet Joey Janela.
But no, man, I'm really looking forward to seeing you. Thank you for chatting to me today, and I'll see you in 3 weeks, dude.
Thank you so much.
Nice one. Thanks, man. That was Paro. I'm so grateful that we had that awesome chat. If you're listening, Monster, please don't listen to Paro. Salted Caramel Java Monster is the greatest drink in the world. Please send me loads of it. Thanks very much. I'm really grateful to Paro. I will put up a link in the description of this podcast so you can go along and see Paro and Jack Sexsmith and their little tour that they're doing in April. Also, I'll put the links up to Paro's Instagram and Twitter feed so you can check him out and follow him on there. He's a genuinely inspiring dude, and I have a feeling that he's going to have a really good year this year. He's a great wrestler too, not just an inspiring guy outside the ring. He's a genuinely good wrestler, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing him in 3 weeks when we're out in New Orleans. Plugs to close. Everything on the Distraction Pieces Network is awesome. Check it out and support it. Really grateful. JimSmallman.com is my website. JimSmallman.com/TNJ is where you point new listeners to this podcast. Rate, review, subscribe, do whatever you got to do with your podcast listening platform. Is that the right word? Whatever you got to do to help this podcast out, I'm really grateful whenever you choose to do it. Whether you're recommending it, subscribing, leaving a 5-star review, that's all awesome. ProgressWrestling.com for tickets to all the Progress shows and merchandise, including tickets to 6th and 7th of April in New Orleans, 5th, 6th and 7th of May at Alexandra Palace in London for Super Strong Style 16 weekend, May the 20th, Victoria Warehouse in Manchester, and September the 30th,
Wembley Arena in London. Plus demand-progress.com for all of our shows in the past. There we go. Plug's done. Thank you again to Paro. I'm very much looking forward to seeing him. Go and check him out on all his social media and support him because he's a great guy. And I will see you next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.